We're going to be looking at the God who is consistent with who he is. If Narelle and I are going to sound like a cracked record, it will be because we will be saying to you constantly, God will be to you as he is. Get that firmly in your foundation. That's a truth that needs to stay there. It's an absolute truth. It is unchanging. And we need to be constantly adjusting and relating to what is true. The thing that I'm pleased about, following the final word of Jesus, the final word of God in Jesus, is that he didn't then leave us without any help. John chapter 14, verses 25 and 26 say, all this I have spoken while still with you. This is Jesus speaking. But the counselor of the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Can you hear that? That isn't new truth. That's reminding you of what's been said. That's light on truth. And that's what the Spirit is constantly revealing to us, the truth. The Spirit and the truth will always agree. Get that into your foundation as well. Because sometimes we want to walk and be judging by a different criteria than the Word of God. And we need to keep coming back to that. Because what I believe about that truth may not necessarily be truth in itself. Have you got that? That's my subjective journey. And there are things that are forming that. My only hope is that I go back and line it up with what I know to be the truth, the absolute unchanging truth I need to keep lining up with. And John 16:13, Jesus also said, and when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all truth. What we need to learn to do is learn how to lean on the Spirit. That's a lifelong journey too, isn't it? Learning how to lean and trust that of God, which will be a help to us. A good prayer often is simply help, as we realise we need to lean and be guided into all truth. So we've heard what God's like, but how do you find him? When you looked at those four little pictures that Narelle put out, it might be what our neighbours think God is, but you know, sometimes that's the way we see him too. On a certain circumstance, we might be seeing God like that, and we might be cross because he's not being as we want him to be. But Amos says, can two walk together except they agree? And what we have to come to terms with in this life is there's only one person who's going to change in this relationship between God and me, and that's me. Right? He doesn't need to. And so I'm constantly adjusting to that, whether I like it or not, whether I like what he's doing, the way he's leading, you know, and I'm constantly adjusting. And that's the journey. There's a searching that goes on and a discovering of the things of God. And I like some of those words because we discover what has been uncovered. God's uncovered and shown and wants to be known. So we're in the process of searching and finding and discovering that. I'm not one for telling jokes and riddles very often, but here's one I like and I use it a lot. What happened to the boy who stayed up all night to see what happened to the sun? it suddenly dawned on him. Now, to me, that's the best description of chewing the truth and meditating, because we have something that we're puzzled by, we don't understand, we don't yet relate to it because we haven't entered into that truth. And we chew it, and we chew it, and we chew it, and we chew it, and suddenly the Spirit of God will throw the light on that so that we have it for ourselves. And that's when the truth then and our journey start to move together. Okay? There are ways to speak with God and ask questions in our journey of discovery. Sometimes the way to say the same thing. Now, we've got this phrase before us, who is God anyway? And there are two ways I can say that. I can say, I really want to know who you are. Who are you? And I'm searching. That's a correct way to approach God. I really want to know you. Or there's, well, who are you anyway? And I'm accusing with a sense of bringing down, perhaps arrogance, anger. And as we'll see as we move through this, that smacks of our enemy. That's what he did right from the beginning. And he will do that always. He's always on the accusing side. He's always wanting to cast doubt on who God is and what he's about. And our journey is to decide whether or not we're going to believe those things, because that's what affects us as we walk this journey. So for us, we're all living life with circumstance after circumstance after circumstance, aren't we? Right? We have this absolute truth, but we're in this life thing that goes on. Our danger is when we can't reconcile our circumstances with the God we know, we let our circumstances tell us what God is like. Okay? Because I'm looking at what's happened to me and I'm trying to understand it. I'm trying to think, where is God in this? Where was he when? How often do we hear that said by ourselves or someone else? Where was God then? And so into our minds can come things like, well, he wasn't there for you, was he? And so on that we're forming our theology, which is, no, you're right, he wasn't. Therefore, he must be cruel. Yeah, he must be cruel. He must be unkind. He doesn't really care. That's right, he doesn't care. He didn't step in to save you, did he? He didn't. He let you go through that. Yes, he's unjust. He's not powerful. If we can learn to say, it feels like this, but it isn't that, because the truth is, okay, you need to know the truth and be lining up. Yes, it feels like God was absent. It felt like I was abandoned. That's what I felt like. But the truth is, I'm not. You see how you line it back up with our journey? God says, I won't leave you or forsake you. Am I going to believe that? Or I'm going to believe when I felt I was forsaken that he must have. I've got to come back to the truth about God and believe his faithfulness and trustworthiness in that. Because if I said to you on a human level, there's someone out there, there's a man out there who'd really like to get to know you and form a relationship, what would be your first questions? Who is he? What's he like? What's he like? Are you going to trust yourself? Are you going to entrust yourself to someone? Can you see why knowledge of God is so important as we learn to trust? Right? Because we're walking alongside and learning to trust. Therefore, we need to ask these questions. So, on a human sense, we'd say, well, what I'd want to know before I meet this person is he kind? Is he compassionate? Is he merciful? Is he loving? Is he fair? Is he going to treat me right? And aren't they the same things as we would want to know about God? And the point is, you need to know them. And they're all in the Bible. And as you know them and you are proving them for yourself, you learn to trust and lean in every circumstance. So we need a bigger picture to just help us go through life and relate to this, because what I'm finding is God is getting blamed for what the enemy is doing. Okay? The enemy's going off scot-free while everyone thinks, yes, this is what God's like. And he's only like that because the enemy of God has portrayed him that way to us. So often we're not examining what's happening in our mind to think whether those thoughts are actually coming from God or somewhere else. But let me tell you, when you start to hear things like, well, he wasn't there for you, have a think about where that voice is coming from. Okay, we'll just go there for a little while today. Because the enemy of God also needs to be known. He's not to be our main focus, but he's to be known because of who he is and the damage he can do to my knowledge of God. But fortunately we find, as we go on in this journey, that 2 Corinthians 10:4 tells me that I have the power to destroy strongholds and everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. That's gold. That's gold. We just need to keep applying that truth, okay? Applying it to our daily journey so that I'm staying there. I need to know simply that the enemy hates God, always had, always will, couldn't stop him, couldn't hold him back, and the only way he can get at God still is through us, through the church. He's always going to be as he is. We have discovered that God is always going to be as he is. Let's know that the enemy will always be as he is. We can't expect him to be other than he is. Okay? He will be who he is. So we'll have a look at that in a minute. It's good to know God before you're in a crisis. Okay? You come along this weekend, you're spending some time getting to know God. Good. Build in day by day by day by day. It's really good to get to know him before the crisis. Now, I like the story of Daniel chapter 3 and Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. I'm not going to read the whole story, but do you know the story? Most of you will. But Nebuchadnezzar was the king. He decided that there was this image going to be set up of him and people had to worship it. Now, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were not going to worship this. They had made up their mind that they were God worshippers, and that was all settled. And so suddenly what appeared to be a nice day for them changed without their permission. Just an intervention cut across that day. And as part of that, Nebuchadnezzar said in an absolute rage, "If you do not worship this image, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Now, put yourself in that story. How would you be feeling when this is happening? And the taunt and the torment coming at that point. Can you see that they needed to know God and have settled the issue of what they were about? Because at that point, there was no point to say, look, there's this conference at Mount Victoria just in a couple of days. If you just give me time to work this out, I'll be able to give you your answer. They needed to know what they were going to do right there and then. They said immediately, "Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us out of your hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up," etc. They went to the fiery furnace. What I want us to see from that is, don't get your truth about God from the enemy. There are our circumstances and there is the enemy. The king said, "What God is going to be able to save you from that?" And they said, our God is still the same as he was, the one we have known. His power is not at question here by you. God wasn't shaking in his boots under Nebuchadnezzar's statement of what about God. So the question was, God could save them. Okay, that is a settled issue. He could. Then they said, but if he doesn't, can you hear that? If he doesn't, the question is whether he will. He can, but will he? Okay, can you hear that difference? One is, he is able. He's not impotent, he is able. Will he is always the question of our journey. It drives our prayer. Will he? Will he save me from him? And if he does not, what view am I going to have of him? See that? If he does not, because here he did not. We'll come back to that. We have to prove these for ourselves. So we're hard up against, does God care? And God's timing, his delays, he didn't. And what happens is they potentially cast doubt on the goodness of God. Can you see that? They will cast doubt on the goodness of God. We need to know whether God is good. Is he good? God will say of himself who he is. He will reveal who he is, and we need to believe that. But the enemy will always cast doubt on the goodness of God. So I always like to go to the places where God himself is revealing something. His words, there is the whole word which is his revelation, but his words when he's speaking and saying things. And so to go to Exodus chapter 3 is when Moses is about to pick up this task of going back for Israel and leading her out. And God says, now Israel had been crying out to God for many, many years, many years. And if we look at it from our human point of view, we think he wasn't in a hurry, was he? He wasn't in a hurry, you know, because Moses had to be born and live 40 years and another 40 years, and now God's saying this. I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've seen. And I've heard them crying out. This is verse 7 to 10. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. And I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land. The cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I am sending you. So this is God revealing, you know, what he feels about this situation, you know. Because we've got to answer for ourselves, does he care? Does he care? Now he revealed here something of his care over very difficult circumstances. We need to see that about God. I've seen, I've heard, I'm concerned, and I'm going to do something about it. We just don't know the timing of God, and we find it hard to understand his delays. Let me assure you that the understanding of God is very different from the knowledge of God. Okay? We're getting to know him. I don't know that we'll ever understand him. Okay? We won't understand his ways, and Isaiah 55 talks about that. My ways aren't your ways. Your ways are not my ways. My thoughts aren't your thoughts. And yet how much energy do we spend trying to fathom that? Which is okay, but just know you won't ever understand God, you know, or we'd be him. We won't understand him, but we're getting to know him and what he's about through his revealed word and through his dealings with people in history and his dealings with us. Does God care? I love Ezekiel 16. I may not take the time to read it, but it's a lovely expression of God caring. And we're going to be looking at God speaking to us and revealing things. You know, do you, in your journey with God, talk to him as a friend, as a companion? Are you relating to him? Like, have you accepted his reality? Not just a force, but a reality and a person that you, to whom you can relate. And I know that in my journey, like that's a growing thing as we get to know God and we relate to him. I at one stage in my journey felt, where am I going to read next? Where am I going to read? And I felt constrained to pick up Ezekiel. And chapter one was really good, really good. You know, glimpses into the heavenly realm there. That was good. Then you start 2, 3, 4, and I'm reading day by day. And I woke up one morning, I'd gone 15 chapters. And I thought, I like my times with the Lord to be, you know, a little bit exciting, something to look forward to. And so I sat in bed and I said to God, I felt that you led me to Ezekiel, but I just need to tell you that I'm finding it a little bit dull and boring. Could you liven it up a bit? You know, I got up and I read chapter 16 like I've never read anything before. I thought, why don't we say it all the time? You know, but he opened that up to me in a way that was just beautiful. As I saw God and what he was saying to Israel, which was, you were cast out. You were cast out. Nobody wanted you. But I passed by and I saw you and I picked you up and I said, live. And then later on I passed by and I said, grow. And later on I passed by again and I looked and I thought, you're old enough for love. And so I made a covenant with you. I said, you're mine. I mean, you look at that. Can you hear that? You know, I couldn't tell you what's in chapter 2 to 15. But I could tell you what's in chapter 16 because God opened that up to me. I ran through the house, I was staying with my parents at the time, ran through the house and said, guess what God's shown me out of Ezekiel 16 today. So I'm telling my mother, who was also a speaker, you know, so we're just comparing notes there. My stepmother was also in another room, so mum's off telling her, guess what God showed Val today, you know. Because it's exciting as God shows things concerning himself and his heart and his dealing. You see, that's our God. Constantly passing by us, constantly passing by, looking, caring. Do we know him as that? You see, we can look at some of the historical stories that are in there for us. Take Joseph, for instance. Joseph, as you may know, had a very hard life. And it looks like he got a fairly raw deal. He had this dream, and he was on a course from then on. Many, many years' duration before actually the fulfilment of that dream took place, right? But you get the impression of God watching over his word to fulfil it, you know, because that's what God will be doing. The things he says, he's going to see they come to pass, to fulfilment. So Joseph, we could go to Joseph and say, what do you think then, Joseph? What have you got to tell us? Like, was that really a horrible deal? And what conclusions were you drawing about God at the end of that? But it says in there, when the brothers were there in front of him, he said, no, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good. He'd learned that in there. He'd learned that. He didn't know that at first. He took the journey and he learned that. He came up with that of God. Because by then God had shown him that, you know, I'm about saving the remnant. Right? And you're it, Joseph. I had to let it be this way. And you know, I sometimes step back and I thought, so can't you see then Romans 8:28? You know, to me that's like the Old Testament version of Romans 8:28. All things working together for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And here it is, back there in the Old Testament, you know. God was using the sin of the brothers. Now, try and write the story again. If we don't want God to use the sin of the brothers, if we don't want bad things to happen to us, how would you write it? How would you rewrite that? Because God needed Joseph over here to prepare him to be here for this purpose, right? To get the rest of the remnant out. God, take him ahead. I mean, I don't know. Our trust has got to be in the end that all things are working together for good, okay? All things. the sin of others against us is not outside of God's watchful eye and care, okay? Even Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, as I said, they had to go through the fiery furnace. All right, we could go and say to them, what would you tell us? What did you feel about God at that point of time? But they learned that God didn't save them from, but he saved them in. He walked with them. Now, we may not ever literally have to be thrown into a fiery furnace, but do some of your crises sometimes feel like that? Right? The shadow and the substance. This is the reality. And we go back there and we learn. What did they learn? Isaiah 43 says, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. When you go through the fire, you won't be burned. Now, so we've got that picture there that God was there. There was the fourth person there with them. He was in it. He did not save them from, because he needed them to go through. And sometimes we've got to see that. God is not about saving me from every little thing. Okay? He needs us sometimes to go through. God is sovereign and aware of everything that's happening. And I don't have a concept of God being a, oops, I missed that one. Plan A's failed. What was Plan B again? You know, I don't have that concept of God. And so when it looks like Plan A has failed, from our point of view, we've got to know God and what he's about. And the fact that all things are working for good. You know, when it looks like we've gone on to Plan B, Plan A is still going through behind. You know, God is not thwarted. We need to know that God is who he is, whether we believe it or not. Okay? Because we can be learning and growing and forming our view, proving him against our circumstances and against the enemy's torments and everything, proving him for ourselves. But he is good, whether I believe him or not. He's worthy of my praise just because of who he is, you know? Because sometimes we're inclined to think, well, he's good because he did this. You know, he would be good whether he did nothing, okay? We've got to just know those things about God and reconcile with them. He's going to be faithful whether we prove that or not. The Bible says, you know, we can be this and he'll be that. We can be the opposite and he'll be this, right? But, you know, we can be faithless. Oh, but he can't join us there. He'll be faithful because he can't deny himself. You know, he's going to be who he is to us. Now, we need to hold certain tensions then, that God does not have to dance to my tune. We've got to remember the creator, creature. You know, there are lots of pictures of God that we can grab. He doesn't have to dance to my tune. Like, I can pray and pray and pray and tell him what to do. But he doesn't have to do that. We learn that God does whatever he pleases. There are actually a lot of scriptures. Job 23, Psalm 115, Psalm 135 all tell me that God will do whatever he pleases. I've got to line up with that. You know, I can battle things out with him. But know that I'm not going to win. I'm battling it out in order to move alongside who he is. God does not have to speak to me simply because I say he must. He doesn't have to appear now because I think it's a good idea. You know, sometimes God does honour those because it's time. You know, how desperate is desperate when we're crying for something? God knows how desperate is, and he knows when he comes in. So he might come in and he might not in answer to our prayer. God communicates with his people, and we say that. We've even talked about it, like Janice was referring to, you know, God conveyed this, you know. We're saying that to each other all the time. Now, what we just to pause there, we need to then know how God speaks. See, there is the word, which is only still speaking because it's living and active. You know, if you grab the concept that those words are, there's life. In everything to do with God, there's life. And God will keep speaking to us. Sometimes we have to believe that he wants to speak to me in specific terms. That affects our ability to hear. which is why we sometimes say, Lord, speak to me, you know. I can believe that he speaks, but will he speak to me? See, that's the will he again. Will he speak to me? And if so, how will I hear it? How will I know it's him? You know, that's part of our journey. I like to say to people, God will speak in a way that you will understand. I'm not going to give you any formulas, but God will convey to you in a way that you understand. Otherwise, he has not communicated, has he? You know, if he passes by and he says something and you don't even kind of pick it up, there's not the link. And that's why we'll be looking at that more tomorrow as well. But sometimes the how is for us. As the Spirit takes things and applies it to us in our journey, have you ever read the scriptures and it's like a verse jumps out? You could have read it many times and it jumps out as the Spirit leads you somewhere on your journey, closer into God. A conversation you might be having with someone and you think there's more to this than meets the eye, and you're trying to tune in to what God is saying, to what the Spirit is conveying for you. At those times when God is choosing to convey someone to you so that you might respond or be on a particular course of obedience with him, there's no place that's safe. Have you found that? There's no place that's safe. I mean, I remember walking through a supermarket and God was dealing with me on something, and I walked through the supermarket and ran into a lady and she was sharing with me about her journey and what God was dealing with her on. I thought, all right, you don't have to rub it in, you know. All right, I'm trying to hear, because God will confirm it in ways through each other. Through each other. We'll be speaking God's words to people and we don't even know. We don't know because we're just living life with him. We don't know. That's his job to know what's coming out of our mouth for each other. I remember once when he was trying to get me to grab something a bit bigger of his love and how big it is. And Ephesians tells us that we can grasp that. You know, it's big. You know, I'm sure we'll never get to the stage where we know love like God knows, which is loving all the world. You know, how much he loved all the world. You know, but we're to grab something of that love and to know it. And I remember as I tried to go, I had a birthday just after that. You just wouldn't believe how many phone calls I had in from friends I hadn't heard from years, you know, until I'm thinking, okay. It's never happened again. Not like that. Because God knows how to convey things to us. A TV program can suddenly have a line coming out at you, which you know is God saying something to you. You can read a book. You know, I can remember once when I was puzzling over part of God's will for me, and I read more than one book at a time, you see. So I had about 5 books all at different stages. So out they come, 5 books. I think, right, I need some time to listen to God. You wouldn't believe that out of where I was up to in 5 books, it was saying the same thing. I mean, you know, it was clear. I obviously need to be told more than once. But we're learning about God. And sometimes we need to rectify things that are out of balance. I actually grew up with a father who I knew loved me, but because of the busyness of ministry, he was absent. So from a young child, I had an absent father. And so my communication was affected with that absent father. I could talk very easily with my mother, not so easily with my father, until we became adults and I was married. Would I communicate with him in a loving way? Okay? You've got to believe that affected my communication with God, right? I had to overcome my view of the father image to be able to accept that my father wanted to talk to me, okay? That's a process of this journey. But work on that. The Spirit needs us to be guided then back to the truth about God. Okay. Last night you wanted to get to know Narelle and me. How did you do that? By listening to us. By the things we're going to reveal to you, you will get to know us. Now hand up those who've ever heard the enemy speak. We usually don't have to have lessons on that, do we? You may or may not say that I know how God speaks, but let me tell you that Hebrews 5 tells me that my faculties are trained by practice to distinguish good from evil, truth from error. My faculties are trained by practice. Okay? To move along there. That's the journey of maturity is hidden in there in Hebrews 5. John 10 tells me, the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and he leads them out. He goes on ahead of them and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they did not recognise a stranger's voice. Now, I'm also very glad, as we want to hear from God and follow him, we need to be careful. And I believe everything of God can see the light of day. God, everything is laid bare with God. Don't ever think that anything needs to be hidden that has its roots in God. Everything is in the light. And that's where God lives and fellowships and moves. Be wary of anything that you feel like you have to keep in the dark. Put a question mark on it and go to a good friend and start talking it through. Because the things of God, it doesn't mean we have to tell everybody everything, but the moment we feel like something is private and just for me, we need to be careful of that because God's going to lead us. But I'm glad he never said I wouldn't hear a stranger. He said I wouldn't follow a stranger. That's my trust in a God who is going to lead me into all truth. That I will hear his voice and I will know it and I won't follow a stranger. And Isaiah 30 will tell me that you'll hear a voice in your ear when you go to turn to the right or to the left. You know? Have you ever been on the journey and you think, I don't know if this is right or not. I'm just going along. I don't know if this is the direction God wants me to take. But you try and turn off it and you'll lose your peace or something will happen and you think, oh, hello, that's the tap on the shoulder saying this was the way. Walk in it. Okay? And that's the security that we have in that relationship. John 8:47, he who belongs to God hears what God says. Let me say it's good to have a disposition to obey. Have you worked on that? I'm going to be looking at that a little bit more tomorrow. It's good to have that, or else why would God bother conveying something to you? He will want to lead you, but you need to work on your disposition to obey. There was a time when our son was about 15, 16, and you bring up your children to walk with God and know the way. And he bowled into my bedroom and said, I've decided I'm not going to listen to God anymore. I said, okay, how did you get there? Where are you? How did you get there? Well, I just decided that if I listen to him, he might call me into the ministry. Right, okay. I commended him. Because I thought, you know something about God that's better. It's God's job to make sure he hears in the end what the journey is. But I thought he knew that it was better not to hear than to hear and not do. I thought, you know something better. That's good. You're okay. You're okay. He's not yet in the ministry. But we taught our kids to be full-time servants of God. You know, wherever you are ministering to God. Okay, that's full-time ministry, isn't it? And if God's got hold of us, he can lead us through. But I will touch on more of that tomorrow. So a brief lesson on just the voice of God, the voice of the enemy, even the voice of self. And this will be brief. There's not enough time to take it too far. What we need to know is God will be consistent with who his voice, with who he is. So his voice and everything he says will be consistent with his character. So you need to know the character of God and who he is. God will not say, you are hopeless. I knew you wouldn't amount to anything. God will not say that. Even if we think that's what's being conveyed to us, know that God is not saying it. And you search the scriptures. Start at Isaiah 43, if you want to start somewhere, with what God was saying to Israel. You're precious and honoured and I love you. That's what he will say. That's what he's about. That's how he feels towards us. Or what about, see, I have engraved you on the palms of my hand. He will be conveying the truth about our link with him. He will be affirming. He will be loving. I have loved you with an everlasting love. Jeremiah 31. He will be compassionate. He will be kind. He will be gentle. He will be patient. Can you hear the fruit of the Spirit there? Right? He will be that to us. He will encourage us. He will be comforting us, caring for us. He will be wise. That's who he is. He is the God of wisdom. And there are many scriptures that, if you want to know more of the scriptures, ask me afterwards. The truth, he is truth. And that's why his word is truth and he will guide us there. And if we say we have no sin, the truth isn't in us. And that's part of our journey in linking back with that. But God, what he speaks to us will be truth. And he will teach us. He will expose things. He will discipline. Not condemn. Where is that going to come from? We'll come there in a minute. He will have a voice of authority and power and majesty. He will be jealous. Because he will guard the apple of his eye. See, there's a positive jealousy. We generally think of it in human terms as a negative emotion. It's not negative when it's to do with ownership, and that is mine, and we realise how much God will guard the apple of his eye. We learn that God's against oppression and the oppressor. He's always with those who are crushed in spirit. He's there. Now, with the enemy, as I said, we can't expect him to be other than he is either. We judge him by his character. If you study the scriptures, you'll have a look at who he is. Jesus again said in John 8, "If God were your father, you would love him, for I came from God and now I'm here. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil. And you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies." Can you understand why I would say, don't get your truth from him? Why should I believe that as my truth? When he's telling me what I'm like, why should I believe that when Jesus himself said he's a liar? He's the father of lies. You know, his aim is to destroy. You know, you look at the scriptures and everywhere. Well, Moses, yeah, destroy all the kids, wipe out everything. You know, Esther, yep, destroy the people there. Jesus' time, yep, Herod, yep, destroy everyone. You know, and the enemy will get hold of who he can and keep working destruction. And so you can then look and he casts doubt on the things God said. He's always done that. He will consistently do that. He instills fear. He's always done that. He will keep doing it. He mocks, he taunts, he condemns, he tempts. He's the accuser of the brethren. Why should I expect him to affirm me? Okay? So we need to keep going back to God. And the thing is, Saul, before he became Paul, thought that he was serving God. You knew that? He thought he was serving God. And he wasn't. God knew. God knew. Saul didn't. Saul's going along his journey thinking, yeah, I'm serving God, right? Killing off all these Christians. Now God stepped in and threw light on Paul's journey. Can you imagine how devastating that sight was? And we're going to look at more of that tomorrow too. Because he needed to be transformed and become a real servant of Christ. But he didn't have the truth at that point. The spirit and the truth were not agreeing. Can you hear that? Paul thought, but it wasn't so. So there's a gap. The spirit had to bring the truth in so the spirit and the truth could agree. You know? And that we won't always have to have a Damascus Road journey, but we need to be lining up. And you know, in case you think that even at Pentecost, you think, well, they got all of the spirit, didn't they? I mean, it just flooded them. They were seeing what they hadn't seen before. Peter got up to preach and said, well, this is that. You know, suddenly the light was on the truth and he could give it to us. Like, this is that. I mean, whoa, I'd heard it, but now I know this is it. And you think, wow, he really began moving into the spirit. But then you look and I thought a bit later, the spirit had to come close again and say, Peter, I just want to touch your prejudice. You know, and before he sent him in to minister to another whole group of people, he said, you're prejudiced, you know. And that's why the journey goes on with the spirit lining up, you know. So why should we expect that it was all done and I've got it all? You know, the Spirit is going to constantly be leading us and guiding us into all truth. Now, I'm not going to take time to talk about the voice of self, but there is one. We can hear that in there too. And if the best way to study it is by looking at the Pharisees. You know, they can come up with all sorts of things, you know, demanding stuff, we're possessive, we're unteachable, we're justifying, we're blaming others. You know, all of that can be within us. But if you want to do an exercise for homework, write out 1 Corinthians 13 in the opposite way. You know how it says love is? Well, write it in the opposite way and write self is. And you'll come up with self makes a big noise, is puffed up with its own importance, cries out to be noticed, is impatient, unkind, jealous, boastful, arrogant, rude, irritable, resentful, insists on its own way, gloats over someone else's wrong. That gives us a good idea of our potential. Left in our raw form, we're not looking pretty. And our hope is that God will come along and guide us into all truth and therefore into his character. And that's what part of the journey is all about. You know, it was Bill Hymer who said somewhere, the enemy wants to keep Christians in the dark as to how utterly he was defeated. And that's part of tomorrow's story. But know that after the enemy has done his worst, God will do his best. So we learn to lean. Just one final little thing. We need to understand the preparation of God, because we don't know what he's going to make of his people, do we? We accept that there's a big plan and there's a big picture. We just don't really know how we fit into that, do we? But God does. And he's positioning us, working with us, preparing, making sure things go right. The same with Joseph, all of that. And I want us just to look back at Moses then, briefly. He was kept alive as a baby when the enemy was saying, destroy, kill everyone off. And through a miracle, he survived. So his first lot of schooling, his first level of schooling was, he was trained under the best in the land, under Pharaoh's training. He was therefore confident. He was sure of himself. He's had a sense of his own destiny. He made a choice then under that to choose rather to suffer with the people of God rather than to endure and enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And so knowing all that, he thought, right, I know I'm the man, right, and he was off. And he killed one Egyptian. And he had to run for his life. Did he get it wrong? No. No, he didn't have it wrong. The call was right, the destiny was right, the training was right. But God needed to work a bit more with his man and his vessel. God needs to get hold of who he's going to use. And so the second schooling begins, 40 years in the wilderness, in the desert. He had the confidence knocked out of him. He felt good for nothing except minding sheep. He doesn't even now believe he can put two words together. I'm not eloquent, he said later on. I'm not eloquent. I mean, he'd been trained. He could speak well. He felt like a has-been. And God steps in at the burning bush and says, this is my man. This is my man. I had to prepare him so I could use him. And then he moves on. Moses walked a long time with God. And it's all recorded there. As we journey through Exodus, you can see the journey of him and God and his leading of the people. But you see Moses' private journey with God. Interaction in prayer, you know. And then he gets to the place where he says, show me your glory. Will you show me your glory? I mean, I want to know more of you. I mean, I know you and I want to know more. And that's our journey as we move on and we want to know more. Exodus 34 shows us then the story of God passing by one of his servants. Moses said, show me your glory. And God said, I'll let all my goodness pass by. I'm going to let you see my goodness. And he said, I'll proclaim my name, the Lord. I'll proclaim that. That's what we're needing to see. This is to whom we are joined, this God. Who is he? And he passes by, says he came down, So Exodus 34:5, the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, "The Lord, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, and forgiving wickedness, rebellion and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished." What we need to grab is, that's not just what God does. That is who he is. That is who he is. And so what he does comes out of who he is. It's almost like he can't explain it any other way than, this is who I am. This is my goodness. This is who I am. And he passed by. And God needs to pass by us as we grab it. So what we need to know is there's God's intention. The enemy has an intent. But then there's the victory of Christ on the other. God loves us too much to leave us in our sin. He loves us too much to leave us with ourselves and with our wounds and our grief. Are you on the journey? Have you presented yourself to God? Then after that, choose close. Choose close. Choose to know him more and more. And the Spirit will be there guiding you into all truth.